Here we go, guys. Just remember, I'm the star of this fucking show. Just fucking shit. Shut the fuck up and let me fucking talk. All right. This is what do I name it? Theme Shooter Podcast, Shooter's Gallery. Is that
like
good?
Yeah, I like that, right?
Yeah. Like a shooting gallery, you know what that is? I got my friend and my guest for week two is Richard Dickey Eklund, the Pride of Lowell, but I'm trying to steal that title from him. You know, I'm gaining ground on him. Christian Bale won an Oscar playing Dickey in the movie The Fighter, people that didn't know. And I brought some motherfucking loser with me.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
You know, it's just a real nigga shit, your real nigga story, you know what I'm saying?
This beat itself so rich.
What else? If you saw my last podcast, I don't know if my guy here filming this. What's your name again?
Justin.
Did you hear about Pauly Black?
No.
Okay, so Pauly Black was my guest last week, for those who don't know, and he's been struggling a little bit, and he was in my sober house a few times, got clean. I've known him forever too, and he's been out on the streets using drugs, and he finally told me he was all done. He wanted to go to detox. So trying to get a bed in detox right now at Mass Health, that's insurance for people on like SSI and stuff. I mean, I'm still on it, Mass Health, but they're going to be canceling that any day. My friend's wife got him a bed in a detox. She pulled some strings, really not supposed to. It was like, she really went above and beyond to get him a bed. So he's like, I want to get high before I go. And right before we got here, Dickie said, what's up with Pauly Black? And I said, oh my God, you don't know? And he's like, no. So I take him and he gets some dope. Now he tells me he's getting dope. He does, you know, he does a little blast or whatever. And I get there and he's going in. I'm with my friend outside who got him in, and all of a sudden he disappears. And I'm like, oh, he must have had a little dope left, and he must have, you know, went around the corner to do it, obviously, you know. So a couple minutes later, he comes walking back around the corner. I see him throw something in the trash, you know, set of works or whatever. And I said, you know, you ready and stuff? And he goes, yeah, there was too much there. I couldn't do it all. So I said, well, you threw it in the barrel, right? He goes, no, I tucked it. You know, which means, you know, suitcasing it, sticking it up your ass, whatever you want to call it. And I'm like, why are you fucking sneaking drugs in a detox? So, Jesus, wasn't even 24 hours. It was the next morning, actually. My friend who did me the favor of getting him in there. Jesus. Sent me this text. You want to zoom in on it or should I just read it?
You should read it. And then if you send me a picture, I'll throw it in the video.
Says, Pauly caused a nightmare. He was trying to box my wife. He was doing somersaults in the hallway. He was throwing punches in the air at her. And he said, call Kevin, call Mike. I don't care. That's me. He told her he brought crystal meth in with him. So I said, you know, Mr. Black and crystal meth don't mix. And he said it again, doing somersaults in the hallway. So I said, well, he's a former gymnast. And he said, okay, that makes more sense. But boxing my wife? What a question mark. And I just said, you know, I'm going to punch him in the face. And then I told him he wasn't a gymnast, actually. And he said I was a riot. So, yeah, I'm not too happy with him. You know, I've done a lot of stupid shit. But I'm more mad that, you know, that they did him a favor and they stuck their neck out for him. And then, it backfired like that. Not only did it backfire, but he's actually throwing fucking punches at the lady like a total fucking moron, you know. So
he became a boxer overnight.
Yeah, somersaults and throwing punches. So yeah, that's what's going on with him right now. But hopefully he fucking wakes up and does something. You know, it's not easy getting in detox, and he seemed really sincere, you know, that he was ready to fucking do it. And apparently he wasn't, you know. So you know, that's that with Paulie Black, and hopefully he comes around, you know. I know Bundy wants to fucking give him another chance, right, Bundy?
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking definitely, of the microphone, yeah.
I'll give him another chance.
All right, yeah, Bundy, man, Bundy.
He deserves it.
Bundy was Bundy was the house. Bundy was my house manager, but I had to temporarily suspend him from his duties last week for being a bully.
Yeah, no, being a bully.
No, all right, yeah. Maybe I was wrong. I thought he was being a bully. He picked it. So there's someone in the house who's really annoying, and I, you know, I finally came to the conclusion that, you know,
Bundy might, his fucking mind.
Yeah, Bundy might have been justified. Yeah. But he threatened him once. I told him not to. And then the kid called me up and said Bundy ran in and picked up his Bluetooth speaker and threw it at him, and it shattered off the wall. So when I questioned Bundy, he said, I just tossed it at him. He should have caught it. I said, all right. You should have told me that. You should have told me that in the first place.
Bundy was a snitch.
Yeah, he is, yeah. He's a teller. So, yeah, that's that. But, yeah, I got Mr. Bundles running the house. When the last time Bundy got out, Bundy, how much time have you done in prison and jail?
A lot of time. Probably like 26 years.
26. So the last time Bundy got out, he took it upon himself to be like de facto house manager. He, I started getting calls because it's $200 a week and the rent's due on Friday and guys, you know, work and they get paid, you know, Thursday and Friday. So after like 2 weeks, I'm getting calls from guys. They're like, Bundy's waking me up at 5 a.m. on Friday looking for the fucking rent money, right? They're like, listen, I don't want any problems, man. I get paid on Friday. I had said, Buddy, don't worry. Just relax. No, I had to call Bundy. I said, Bundy, relax, buddy. You know what I mean? He's in there like a leg breaker, fucking tip, like, shaking these guys down, you know? But yeah, and Mr. Eklund was a resident of the house for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still, I still get his mail there.
Oh, yeah.
He's out of there now. He's doing good. Dickie, been sober for a while now. He's been going to meetings, and we're actually going to speak at a meeting in a couple of weeks. I'm going to tell you that. They want me to go to some place in Quincy.
Yeah.
So I said I'd bring you, you know. Dickie, I've known Dickie since 1978, right? I mean, most of these fucking kids now watching the show are probably born in fucking between 2000 and 2005.
I got Mike broken in.
Yeah.
By some prostitute. Yeah. Get over there in the alleyway. She's waiting for you.
I actually talked about this last week. I actually talked about, but I always used to tell people, I said, Dickie was absolutely fucking crazy when he was younger. And, you know, since I was a little kid, these are the people I, you know, I looked up to, you know, and I was attracted to, you know, you say bad guys, but good bad guys, you know what I mean? And Dickie was fucking, Dickie's a legend. He still is in Lowell.
201 Middlesex.
201, yeah, this building was full of prostitutes and pimps and the pimp Red Dog, I used to say. He used to be doing that. I used to see him doing heroin when I was a little kid, and we used to make fun of him, you know. But we were around there, me and Johnny Sheehan. I'm telling him with Shine Box, and we used to shine shoes and stuff. But so I used to tell people, I said, Dickie and Mickey, you know, they were, Mickey was 4 years older than me and Dickie was 12 years older than me. And I was like tagging along, and I just always looked up to these guys. And I joke around. I said, I followed Dickie around so much, I followed him into a prison cell.
Yeah.
That didn't work out too well.
Good influence.
Yeah. Good influence. But growing up around Dickie and everybody in the neighborhood, it was, you know, It seemed normal. But as I get older now and I see other people and they're like, you know, I tell stories and talk about this and that. People are like, well, that's fucking crazy. You know, tell me another story. I'm like, I don't know. It just seems like I thought everybody grew up like that. But, you know, when I remember I was in prison when the movie The Fighter come out, you know, and I got out and I went right over his mother's house, Alice, God rest her soul. And Dickie was there with his with his sister and caught up with him a little bit, and then I moved right back in over Boo Boo's house, and it was back to the same old stuff, you know. And Dickie had this I call Dickie Kippy because we used to call, he used to call Perks Kippies because Mickey, his brother Mickey had a sparring partner, Kippy Diggs. So it was like, you know, code in the gym. Dickie would be like, Kippy, Kippies. And I'd be like, yeah, you know, he's like, all right. He run outside and, you know, selling some Perk, going back and forth. So to this day, people see him and they yell, Kippy. Everyone's calling him Kippy because that's what he started calling each other, Kippy. And people don't even know it's about Perks. But
yeah,
what Dickie used to call the code Quackers, you know, Quacker, you know, Quackers. And
you named my dog that.
Yeah, I was just, that's what I was going to talk about. So when I get out, he had this dog, this little poodle, Quacker. And we get high and Dickie would say, Quacker, cops, right? And the dog would like stand up on his hind legs, like
freeze.
Fucking, put his hands up. He'd say, Quacker, freeze. And the fucking dog would get up in the corner. I mean, geeked out. He'd have the dog fucking assuming the position up in the fucking corner every time we do a hit, you know? So. Fucking, oh, man. I know. I mean, we did have some fun, you know. Yeah. I remember I let him down when he saw me, you know, sticking the needle in my arm, you know, because that's one line Dickie never fucking crossed. He never did the dope either. I mean, maybe he would have did it once or twice. I don't know.
Yeah, when John said this, it was coke one time, and it looked like coke. He says, I used to give him big things. I used to go come back from Florida with it. He gives me a little matchbook cover, right? So I does it. Next thing you know, I wake up in the hospital.
Yeah. That's his brother-in-law, John Brady. Rest in peace, John. He's another one we lost, you know, lost his battle, you know. And, Dickie never did the dope, you know. He always, you know, did the perks. And, yeah, the Quackers, the coke and the perks and, you know, methadone or whatever. But he never crossed that line. And I remember one night, you know, Dickie actually told me this. He called up this coke dealer. Remember the one I robbed in the hallway?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he goes, I was remember, he's like, he told him to bring 40s of coke and a rock and 40s of powder or something, right? So I'm waiting in the hallway and this Dominican comes in and I got him up against the wall. I said, low police, don't move, motherfucker, hinge on your head. So I'm patting him down and I get it and I pull it up. And the kid I'm with, Tony Souza, another one who's dead. Rest in peace, T. Another one lost his battle. I found him dead. But as soon as I find the coke, I put it in my pocket. No, I give Tony half. I get half. It's two bags. He takes off like a rocket. But right before I rob the guy, a kid comes in the hallway. And I get him fucking up against a wall. The kid's like, you know, my name's Jimmy. I live upstairs. I didn't do that. So I go, this is an undercover investigation. Go upstairs and don't say anything to anybody. So now I'm in the hallway with the lights on. I'm waiting for this kid's father to come out. Fucking kid was fucking like he saw a ghost. So now the Dominican comes in and I got him up against the wall. And the kid I'm with takes off like a fucking rocket. So now he's realizing, now this kid's got some coke. I got coke. He's running with it. So I'm like, this motherfucker got the other back. So I take off and now this crack dealer starts chasing me, right? I'm running down fucking Pine Street. I'm running after Tony. He fucking goes up and over. He goes up and over a fence in a second. But I'm like, Tony, stop. Now I'm getting out of breath. I'm like, I'm just going to turn around and bang this dude out. Like, I'm not going to be running through yards. This guy. So I turn around. I go to put my hands up. And he had this belt with a big, big metal Dominican flag belt buckle. And he's fucking swinging the thing like a fucking, like Jim Carrey, the cable guy, like the mace thing, right? So he swings it and I go like this and it catches me right under the chin. Yeah, I still got the scar.
Yeah.
The scar. Split out my whole chin.
Dominican on it.
Yeah. So, you know, I wobble for a second. I get him and I end up like foot sweeping like an arm. I go on top of him. And I'm choking him, and I'm choking him out. And all of a sudden, I hear there's two Puerto Ricans there, or Spanish guys. They got a pit bull, and they're yelling in Spanish. And I'm choking them. Like, you're going to kill him. You're going to kill him. Let him go. So I get up, and I'm gassed. I still got the coke. And they're like, oh, we called the police. So I looked at the two guys. I go, he's a crack dealer. We just robbed them. So they start talking to each other in Spanish. I see them like, hey, we don't want to be in bar. Goes, that's what I thought. And then all of a sudden I see Dickie's girl go by. So I go running. I dive in the van with fucking him and his girl. And we went to this house in Lowell in the corner. And I remember I was in the bathroom and he came around the corner with his girlfriend. And I had the spoon and the needle and I was drawing it up. And I had the thing tied around my arm, you know. And I remember she was mortified. And he was just like, you know, I know the feeling. I've seen people I know who loved ones even who went that route. And when you see it, you know, it sucks. You know, it's like, you know, I mean, that's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the as far as drug addiction goes, when you start, you know, using a needle, it's just fucking, it's the worst.
It's over.
Yeah, it's over, yeah, pretty much, you know? And that was something I struggled with for a while. You know, it was tough. It was a tough thing to break. When I remember Dickie seeing me like that, I had one other time. My father always stuck by me from when I was a kid. I love my mother, but she, when I started getting in trouble when I was 14, because my father was a little wild, she signed me over the state and I ended up in foster care. But I was bad. I was a bad kid. I don't want to act like she just, she just kicked me to the curb. But I mean, you know, in a way she did, but she couldn't handle me, and that's all she knew. She didn't know.
Either good the prison, you broke out of every one of those.
I did. I escaped from a lot of DYSs and then, you know, first foster cares and DYSs. But I remember my father one time, I did like 6 months in secure treatment. They wanted to give me another 6 months, and they had this meeting, and it was like the head of the Department of Youth Services. My mother went there, my father, and they asked my mother to speak, and she's like, don't let him out. You know, he's going to do this, he's going to do that. When he was living with me, you know, he's doing X, Y, and Z. So then they said to my father, well, what do you think? He's like, well, when he was living at me, he was going to school every day. I'm like, lie. He goes, he had a job in the summer. He was paying me, you know, $20 a week, room and board. And I remember it's like a table like this, like a big table with all these DYS workers. And I remember looking across saying, that's my guy, you know what I mean? That's my guy. And my father was always in my corner. And
I guess
the reason I say that, like, I'd be out running around, I could go there, I could always sleep there. Dad, I need $20, $40, you know, and I'm sick. And he knew it because I'd been arrested and everyone knew it, but he lived in this townhouse, and you know, it's, you pull into a garage and it's like a washer and dryer and a little laundry room, and you go up the stairs, you know, a townhouse, right? So I go down to the dryer, and I set up, and I got the belt around my arm, same thing, right? And I'm setting up, and I had my cell phone up on the table, and it rang, but the dryer was on, because I could always hear someone come down the stairs. You hear someone come, I get it away, and I didn't hear it. And he opened the door, he's like, you got a phone call? And I had fucking blood dripping, you know. And I just remember the look in his face. It was like he fucking aged.
Yeah.
Fucking 100 years right in front of me, man. I remember like that, like, you know, being in that bathroom with Tony Sue's in that house in the corner of School Street when you and then Leslie saw me and my father seeing me like that. It was eye-opening, to say the least. You know, I felt like, you know, I just felt like the biggest fucking loser in the world, rightfully so, you know. That was a fucking tough one, you know, but
you had Phillip Street to go to anyway.
Yeah, I still have Phillip. Dickie lived on the next street behind my house, so I could always go over there with him, you know?
Yeah, get a couple of fucking methadones and come off here.
Dickie would always have the methadones and the Percs and the OCs and everything to help me out. And Dickie got a back injury, and you know, the doctor was giving him the fucking ton of methadone, ton of Percs, just like Boo Boo, right? These guys would get, you wouldn't believe
it. He was insane. 360 methadone 10s and 80 milligram oxycontin a month.
Wow. And he was still out by the end of the month. But really, I'd go over there and Dickie would always look out for me when I was sick or anything like that, you know? And Boo Boo too, rest in peace, Gary Boo Boo Jafrida. He was like family, you know. They portrayed him in the movie The Fighter also, and also High on Crack Street. If anyone's seen that, I don't even like seeing it, but it is what it is. You know, they made an HBO documentary on Dickie and on Boo Boo also called High on Crack Street: Lost Lives in Lowell. You know, And Boo Boo, the same thing. You know, he'd get pills. I mean, he'd get 10s, 20s, 30s, fucking methadone. And you know, I remember once Boo Boo, it was hard to find a pharmacy. They had the guy George out in Drake. Boo Boo, when they put the Hannafords out in 38 in Lowell, there was a new pharmacy on the left, and I was going to rob this pharmacy. They had a door right to the left. Then I went there one day, and they blocked off the door. I'm like, I'm getting them. And I was close, and they blocked off the door. They must have realized the way it was set up, you know? It was new. But I'd go in there, and that was the only place that would fill all his pills, right? So I go in there one time, and I'm with him, and I'm walking around. So he's waiting to get his prescription. And all of a sudden, there's two security guards around us. They go, fucking Lee. I go, what's up? He goes, give me the diaper wipes. You guys got to leave. I go, Boo-Boo goes, diaper wipes, kid? I go, what? You, what are you, a barbarian? What are you, you fucking regular toilet paper? You fucking nut? The guy's like, listen, you got to leave. He's like, you motherfucker, this is the only place that'll fill my pills. Can I wait? They're like, no. He's like, give me. So I reach in my pocket. I hand him the thing. And Boo-Boo's like, he keeps saying, diaper wipes, kid? I would have fucking bought him. The guy's like, give me the other package. I got another one. You know? I reach in. I hand it to him. He's like, you don't think we know who the fuck you guys are? He's like, fucking high on crack straight. The fight was out. The fight. He's like, you don't think we fucking know that? He's like, the second you come in the store, fucking all eyes are on you two fucking nuts, you know? So fucking, yeah, that was it going with Boo. Uncle Boo, I miss Boo. But fucking Dickie, when I was young, you know, I look back now at all the stuff. I remember, Dickie, I was up the beach with Mickey, and they'd babysit me, and his mother and my aunt would get together, and they'd have a cottage up the beach every year, and their family was so fucking crazy. They'd all be drunk, fighting each other. It would be, I'd be a little kid, and it would be just the craziest shit you ever seen in your life, you know? And I remember being up the beach, and, you know, 1978, 77, you know, I was, you know, 7, 8-year-old kid up the beach. They were babysitting me. And I remember Dickie is one of the most gifted athletes, you know, to be a professional athlete. You know, some people, you know, it obviously it's a lot of hard work and it's a lot of practice. And, Dickie was just gifted, you know, he was different. He could just run forever. I mean, he'd just never get tired. He would spar. He would hit the mitts. He would hit the bag. He would just never, until even if he didn't, you know, get an injury on his back and his leg, he'd be the same way. He just doesn't fucking tire out. It's the craziest thing. And when we were kids, Dickie could run 10 miles backwards, running backwards. You see him in prison, he's running around the track, running backwards. He'll run 10 miles backwards. And when we were kids, he'd run all the way to the jetty, and Mickey was 4 years old, and we'd race him, and he'd play with us, and then he'd just turn on the jets and you know, amazing, you know, how he could run, you know? And I remember he, you know, when he fought Sugar Ray Leonard, it was a big deal. And you look back now, Sugar Ray Leonard's one of the greatest welterweights of all time, even though I think he fucking ran from Hagler and fucking Hagler, you know, that fight.
I was there. He won. Leonard won.
Yeah.
Mickey fought that night.
I was in Berwick House of Correction. I was 17, 87. I turned 18 in there. So, were you there that night at the fight?
Mickey fought that night.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, I forget. I don't remember that, but I remember the fight because I had a bet with somebody.
You stopped Kelly Coble.
Oh, yeah?
Fifth round, yeah.
Body shot?
No, cut over the eye.
All right. Yeah, so... when Dickie fought Sugar Ray Leonard, I mean, just fucking hero status immediately. And at the time, and I tell Dickie, and I remember this from when I was a little kid, right? And I never saw a fight card again. I was helping putting them up in the windows. And I remember it said, he wasn't a world champion then, I don't think. It said, Sugar Ray, Olympic gold medalist Sugar Ray Leonard versus Lowell's tough Dick Eklund. I remember that, you know, I forget stuff from a year ago, five years ago, 6 months ago. Like, people come up to me and tell me stories. There's a few good ones, you know. One, shut down a restaurant in the North End. I was with the New Kids on the Block and Mark Wahlberg till 4 a.m. And I was with two kids. And they're like, remember that night? And I'm like, no. Like, you know, I was in a coma a few times. There's stuff that it's just wiped clean, my memory, you know. And there's other stuff I remember from, you know, when I was fucking... like then, eight, 9 years old, a kid. And I still remember that. I'm like, man, I wish I'd have that card. I know they had replica cards made up for the movie or this and that. But even like at the West End gym, they had all these old fight cards with all fighters we grew up with and other fighters from New England. And that fucking card, man, I never saw it. Did you ever see one? Have you seen one since back then?
No.
What the fuck? Where are they?
I don't know.
But yeah, when
Phillip Street.
Phillip Street, yeah. Dickie had a lot of memorabilia on Phillip Street. So when Dickie was living on Phillip Street behind my house.
I didn't even get a chance to sell my house.
Dickie moved in this house, and he was there a while. And something happened with the owners. The owner lost it to the bank. And nobody went there for like 3 or 4 years. So Dickie rented out the upstairs apartment. Did I ever tell you this? To an Asian family. Right? Yeah.
He's collecting. He's
up there on the first. Yeah, 1400, whatever it was, 1200, right? It's like 3 years.
Just
right?
800 a month. That's all.
Right, so
they had like 3 or 4 rooms. I said, no little kids because the windows are not safe.
Yeah. There's lead paint. Be careful. So they didn't even have like heat on. It was some weird thing. They didn't have hot water or something.
No.
They lived up there like 4 years. One of the kids was going to high school, right? So I go down to the I'm down in Arizona at the Super Bowl when Malcolm Butler made the interception. That's part of my story too. The tickets went through the roof, and I sold a pair of tickets for $17,000 when I first got out of detox in Florida. It was shortly thereafter. It was probably a year. But I'm down in Arizona, and he calls me, and it's fucking 105 degrees in Arizona. And he says, you know, the hot water heater? Something broke. His house was a fucking icebox, right? So he's like, you know, I'm going to get out of the city and tell them, you know, they got to, you know, fix this. And I'm like, listen, dude, don't get out in the fucking city and start complaining about the fucking hot water heater not working. But something happened, and they went there, and they're like, this house has been condemned in fucking in 1972. Like, what the fuck are you doing here? Like, you got to be out of here within 24 hours.
Yeah.
And the family upstairs, they put them in a hotel or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was Phillip Street. That was great. If that fucking... That hot water, we'd still be on fucking Phillip Street. Gertie, his cat.
Yeah, no, Quacker, my dog.
Yeah, Quacker. Poor Quacker. Another one. Rest in peace, Quack.
I know.
Quacker fucking ran over by a car. Dickie was driving around with him in a fucking box in the back seat. I had him
for days, taking him to hotels with fucking feet. I'd go up and get him a steak, bring it down. I'd order him a nice big steak.
Really?
Yeah, I had a couple $100,000 on me. I'd be getting Quacker steaks, figure that out. The dog never ate it, he was dead, but.
Yeah, he's running around. When he get money from the fight, he's running around with money in a brown paper bag.
Spending it like crazy, huh?
Yeah.
I had a lot of associates then.
Yeah, of course. They all fucking fade away when it's all gone, right?
Yeah.
But going back to that time, I remember when I was a kid, you know, the picture of him in the newspapers after he fought Leonard, you know, And afterwards, didn't Sugar Ray want you to be a sparring partner? Did you get on to Canada with you?
Yeah. Well, he's sparring for Duran.
Oh, all right. Then they found you in a crack house in Canada somewhere, or what happened? No, were you in Nova Scotia? No?
No.
You were good when you were down there in the camp with him?
Yeah.
All right. Well, he's been known to run away. I mean, it's not like a stretch that you fucking disappear.
Couldn't wait for Mickey to weigh in, so I'd leave.
Yeah.
I went right down to New Jersey. Went right down to Projects. I was the only white guy there. And I took the kids from Lowell with me, all the white kids. And I says, give me your money. I'm going up. Wait here. They said, no, you're going to rip me off. I says, well, forget it. I'll go myself. I want myself like I'm down there. I went in the ambulance. I'll get beat up.
Lance and them, right? Was it Lance?
Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus
Christ. Ambulance took them all away.
Yeah. Atlantic City's bad. If people don't know, that's fucking, it's a tough, tough neighborhood. You know?
I knew them all because we're at the gym, me and Mickey, and George Foreman was beside me, right? And I didn't know who he was. He had a towel over his head. He's like this down. And all of a sudden he goes like, I'm right here at the edge. And he's right where you are. And he goes, gives me a push. I fall on my ass. I looks up. He goes, what am I supposed to do?
Big George.
Yeah, Big George.
Yeah, I met Big George.
People didn't even know he fought. They just knew he was the grill guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a fucking beast. He was a beast. Rumble in the Jungle. He fought Ali, right?
Yeah.
Zaire, right? Zaire. It was Africa. Yeah, Rumble in the Jungle. Big George. Yeah, so... That's one thing. Even me being with Dickie, bouncing around, it seems like, you know, knock on wood, right? I've been lucky my whole life. I've gone into neighborhoods where you shouldn't go. You know, don't go over there. We go over there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As soon as I go somewhere, don't go over that part. And that's the first place we want to go. Oh, really? Don't go over there? All right. Yep, that's where we're going. You know, and like I said, knock on wood, it's turned out all right. Now, you know, that's why I'm knocking on wood. I'll be in fucking the slums of Bogota in about 6 hours. You know what I mean? Then I'll head over to Medellin. They don't they didn't have direct flights to Colombia, and they started flying direct to Bogota. So I'll fly to Bogota and then bounce over to Medellin.
Things you can do today because you're sober, right?
Yeah, things I can do. You know, I mean, I definitely wouldn't. I'd have those false teeth in my head. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think we got to wrap this up soon. You got another guy out here, right? You got some guy coming in?
I think you got a bit.
All right. We'll give it a few more minutes. My guy Bundy over here. Should we tell him about your old man?
Well, if you want.
All right.
If you want.
Bundy's old man disappeared when he was young. But Bundy's father, they made a movie about Bundy's father also. Do you know that?
No.
It was called Vault. And they robbed a mob bank in Rhode Island. And what'd they get?
You got like $30 million.
$30 million in like 1980, right? Hold on, we gotta get this. This is insane. That's his name. His namesake. Well, he's his namesake. All right, we gotta zoom in on this. We do this.
Go.
All right, so how 8 bumbling thieves stole $30 million from a mafia bank. That's Bundy's dad and Chucky Flint.
Yeah.
So, yeah. See the resemblance a little, right?
I don't know. I don't see it, no. You?
Yeah, I do.
Do you really?
Yeah.
The nose, I see a little bit.
Yeah. Squinty eyes, you know?
Yeah.
A real sneezle look. Look at the old.
Wendy don't have his talent, though.
No, he
was a master thief.
Yes, he was.
Bundy.
You talk about professional right there. Look, that's him right there.
Yeah, that's from the New York Post, how 8 bumbling thieves stole $30 million from a mafia bank. That was in like 78. Imagine that. You were fighting Chick Corea Leonard. His old man was knocking off banks. I was shining shoes. we're all doing our thing. You know what I mean? Bundy, actually, what did you do for a career, Bundy?
Steal heavy equipment.
That's what Bundy does for a living. Yeah, he'd steal.
At the time.
There's not many people out stealing heavy equipment. It's a niche. It's a niche that Bundy found on his own. You know that if you get a truck with a trailer hitch, he'll drive away with your Bobcat. I'll end with this. Back when I was still using, I was living in a shooting gallery in that fucking kid's house, and Bundy got out of prison, you know, and he called me up. He said, "What are you doing? I want to go do a score, right? You want to come?" I said, "Yeah, of course." So we went to this landscaping company, and I had the bolt cutters, and we cut the locks, and he'd always have me pick up the lock I cut in the chain, fucking put it in a bag. We wouldn't leave it there.
Yeah.
I opened the gate, pull in with the truck, shut the gate, hook up a landscaping trailer, fucking lawnmowers, fucking this big leaf sucking blowing machine. Yeah. I don't know. We're in there for a half an hour loading up this giant trailer, right? And we drove away, and you know, he always had someone who'd buy all the stuff, and you know, he probably got like 10 grand and gave me like, you know, 50 cents. I forget exactly the breakdown of the money, what he, you know.
You got paid well.
Fuck you are. But I remember years later, he said, "You remember what you said to me when I dropped you off over at that shooting gallery?" And I said, "No." And what did I say?
I said, "I don't want to be a junkie no more." Always remember that.
Yeah.
Always remember that.
Yeah.
I said, "I don't want to be a junkie no more. I don't want to be a junkie the rest of my fucking life." You know.
Yeah. And, that always stuck to. Always stuck to me.
Yeah. And thank God, man. I mean, I can't say I'm never going to be one again, but I can tell you that I got over 10 years now. You know, drug and alcohol free, and. I'm looking to keep it going. You know, I own 2 sober houses now, and one of the biggest things for me now is other guys like me, guys that helped me like him, even though he fucking chiseled me and only gave me like 5% of the score. I still, you know, they get out of jail. Guys like, you know, I have friends. They don't have much family. Do you have any family left?
None.
And I tell him, it will be the same with you, even though I know you get your place now and stuff. Like, you always have a place for me. And that's what's cool about my sober house is I'm there every day playing cards. You know, sometimes I got to slap under your arm. I got to keep in line. You know what I mean? It gets a little, but all jokes aside, like I'm there playing cards. We're busting balls. We're having fun. And it's like being a kid and you got some fucking hangout or a clubhouse or we hung out in the corner or, you know, in the alley behind 201. Like we used to meet there and smoke weed. It's like, this is my fucking, my clubhouse, you know, my alley, my corner where I go every day. And we have fun.
And you own the clubhouse.
Yes, I own the clubhouse.
And you own a massage parlor.
Yes, I own a massage parlor too. It's there's no happy endings, guys. So please don't. But all right,
just happy beginnings.
Yeah, that's it. All right, this is another one in the books. Episode 2. That's a fucking wrap. You ready, boys?
All right, buddy.
You know, this just a real nigga shit. Your real nigga story. You know what I'm saying?
This beat is so niche.
Ice like a bunch of narcotics. There were. Pull up in that new Rari.